This is Audible.
Ooh, listen to that music, people. Now, you know that some serious shit is about to go down right now. This may be the greatest book ever written by a human being. You know what? Let's put something else to that. This may be the greatest book not only written by the most amazing human being, but read by the greatest human being ever. Maybe not. Maybe not. I could just be pulling that out of my butt. I don't know. All I know is that you're going to have to listen to my voice for about the next 13 hours or something. So what you should do is brace yourself. Brace yourself for a hot dose of Kevin Hart in your ear. Let's just begin. Let's just begin the audiobook. Are y'all still listening? Yo, I don't know how this shit work, man. How do I know if they listening or not? Well, I just don't know if they listening. Like, I know what I'm saying, but nobody's replying. That's what I'm saying. So I'm just talking to myself. So that's how this work. I just talk. Okay, all right, y'all, look, let's just start, okay? Audible Studios presents I Can't Make This Up, Life Lessons. This is written by Kevin Hart with Neil Strauss. It's also being performed by a good friend of mine named Kevin Hart. Am I the first person to ever do this? Have people done this before? Who the fuck am I talking? Nobody's answering me. So why am I even asking questions? Okay, it's performed by Kevin Hart. That's me, people. I'm reading my own book, which officially makes this the first book I ever read from beginning to end. That's very true. I've never read a book. I want to say that on record. I have never read a book, so this will be the first time that I've actually read a book, and it just so happens to be my book. So, this is a dream come true. I understand, guys, that what you're about to hear is stuff that I really can't make up. Let's start off with my dedication, man. It's to my mom, my rock, my angel. I am who I am because of you. I mean, my commitment to my craft and becoming the best version of myself is all because of you, Mom. The lessons that you've given me are beyond priceless. For that, I thank you. Love you. All right, let's get into it. You guys pumped up? I am. Let him who would move the world first move himself. That's not me, that's Socrates. A sliding board can't be slid on if you ain't got on the right pants. Chocolate dropper. It's one of his best quotes. This is just to get you in the mood. I'm warming you guys up. That's what I'm doing. I just want to kick it off with some cool quotes. Mandatory introduction. This introduction is mandatory. That means that you have to listen to it. See, you can't just skip ahead to the sex scenes. Because in order to get the most out of this book, there are three important words that you're going to need to know and understand. The first word is ha. It's pronounced short and sharp, as if someone just hits you in the stomach. While speaking it, here's what you got to do. You got to pull your neck back, raise your eyebrows, and quickly scan the room to make sure that everything looks normal and that you're not in some weird-ass dream. The dictionary definition for this word is, did you just say what I think you said? Because it literally makes no sense and my mind can't process it right now. So I'm going to have to ask you to repeat it. It's the kind of thing that you might say when your dad comes home bleeding and tells you that someone hacked him in the head with an axe. This really happened, people. I can't make this up. The second word is what. This is pronounced with a silent T, and it generally follows a few seconds after ha. It's spoken with your mouth contorted into a look of disgust and your forehead crease while looking at someone like the batshit crazy. It's short for, what the hell did you say? Because I only asked you to repeat the crazy shit you just said, and now you're adding some even crazier shit on top of it. See, my ears can't believe what they're hearing right now. It's the kind of thing that you might say when your dad, whose head is busted open and wrapped in a blood-soaked towel, assures you that he's fine and doesn't need to go to the hospital and just wants to lie down for a little bit. The third word, and final word, is okay. See, this is spoken with a shoulder shrug, a side-to-side shake of the head, and a roll of the eyes. It means I can't even begin to fathom your reality, but I've decided to just accept it and move on. It's what you say when a high and a want have gotten you absolutely nowhere. And you're starting to think that maybe you actually are stuck in a dream and shouldn't eat pizza before bedtime anymore. Like when your dad tells you the reason that someone hacked him up with an axe was because he was jealous of his skills as a refrigerator repairman. Now this all may seem unbelievable to anyone who hasn't met my father, but this is the honest to God truth. In life, let me tell you something. You can choose to cry about the bullshit that happens to you, or you can choose to laugh about it. I choose laughter. These are the stories behind the jokes and a few lessons that I figured out about life, success, parenting, and relationships along the way. Actually, I'm still working on the relationship part, but the rest I got down. Life lessons from Dad. Don't do what I do. Do what I would tell you to do if I wasn't doing the stupid stuff I did. That's a quote from my dad. Chapter 1. Birth of a sex symbol. See, my life began with one of those biggest lies men tell women. I'll pull out, I promise. Those were the words that turned into me. Of course, my dad had no intention of pulling out. I mean, look, he wasn't planning on knocking up my mother either. He just never learned from his mistakes. The first mistake happened 8 years earlier. His name was Robert Kenneth, my older brother. Our parents had just met back then. So Dad was able to get away with the big lies. My nuts then got squashed in a bike accident. I can't do nothing with him. See, that's really what he told her. I can't make this stuff up, people. When my mother found out that she was pregnant, she beat the hell out of my dad. His other lines were, I'm just going to put it in and leave it there. But I just want to be close to you. And then there was the classic one. This one was my favorite. I'm just going to rub you with it. I promise I ain't going to put it in. To be honest, I'm surprised it was only two of us. Though, I mean, that's if you count all the other women that he did this with. There's something like 11 of us with six different women. At least one of them is my age, too. That's a fact. So he definitely didn't learn from his mistakes. See, my mom and dad met when he was working for Bell Telephone, and she was a cashier at a shopping bag grocery store next door. From the moment he laid eyes on her, a fine petite country girl with big hips, as he put it, my dad started begging her to go on a date. I mean, this went on every day for about a year. My dad wasn't persistent because he was in love with her. He was a player. I mean, look, he probably had about 30 women all over town, and he was using the same lines on all of them. My mom just held out longer. As my dad always tells me, even though I do not need to hear it, he had to con her out of the draws, because she never had sex before. See, they never married, though they stuck it out together. I mean, probably because Kenneth was born a year after they started seeing each other. But they were like oil and water. I mean, my mom was bossy. My dad hated being told what to do. My mom didn't party. My dad did. My mom didn't believe in fighting. My dad believed fighting made you a man. My mom couldn't stand the smell of cigarettes, weed, or alcohol. My dad stunk of all three. My mom believed that sex was a sacred thing. My dad didn't believe anything was sacred, especially sex. When my mom found out she was pregnant with me, my father was picking up Kenneth from school. Spoon! My mom's sister Patsy yelled from inside the house when my father and Kenneth came home. My dad's full name for the record is Henry Witherspoon, but everyone called him Spoon. My brother's nickname was Lil Spoon. Yes, ma'am. Come here. My father walked up the steps. My Aunt Patsy did not budge. Get in here. Right now. That's when my father knew he was in trouble. What did you do? That's what she asked him as soon as he walked in the house. My dad was like, what you talking about? She said, Nancy pregnant, and she in there crying. My dad was like, nah, Nancy ain't pregnant. Yeah, well, go tell her that. She in there waiting on you. My dad immediately hung his head and accepted his fate. He walked apologetically into the bedroom and got cussed out royally. Now, usually he could say, I love you. See, that'll calm her down. Whether he meant it or just used it as a strategy to appease her, no one knew, but this time, it didn't do him any good. And he went to sleep that night with her still going off on him, saying how this pregnancy was going to destroy her life. She just got back to school and completed the computer programming class. I mean, she was focused on fresh start, not fresh diapers. When my dad woke up the day after finding out I was on the way, my mom wouldn't even speak to him. She didn't say another word to him for the next 3 weeks. And that's how I came into the world. My life began as a lie. I mean, I was unwanted. My mother cried when she found out I existed. And I sat there stewing in her anger for months in the womb. At least that's one way to look at it. Here's another way. My life began with passion, with my father's unrelenting desire for my mother. And even though I was unplanned, my mother made a commitment to having me and raising me right. And I inherited her commitment to hard work and my father's unique sense of humor, bottomless optimism, and ability to get his way. Life is a story. And I'm going to tell you something, it's full of chapters. And the beauty of life is that not only do you get to choose how you interpret each chapter, but your interpretation writes the next chapter. It determines whether it's comedy or tragedy, fairy tale or horror story, rags to riches or riches to rags. You can't control the events that happen to you, but you can control your interpretation of them. So why not choose the story that serves life the best? Chapter 2. Blessed life of a genius. Though no one spoke about it, I always knew I was an accident. I mean, it would have been obvious to anyone who looked at my mom's photo albums. Hey, Mom, where was y'all at here? I think that's when we went to some island in Florida. Huh? Well, how'd y'all get island money? That was before you were born, Kevin. We took a family trip to Key West. Well, what's Key West? Wait, what's this tree Ken is swinging on? Oh, that was a poplar tree. Yeah, your father built a swing on that tree. A swing? Oh, okay. I didn't even know Dad could build swings. I kept turning pages, asking where they were in different photos since I had never seen the luxury of traveling. I asked about the sharp suit Dad was wearing and Mom's fancy hairdo. I saw my brother eating cake and holding ice cream in pictures, sitting next to Dad, who, by the way, looked healthy. I mean, he had firm muscles and good hair. They looked so happy and well off. Then I came along. As soon as I was born, the pictures in the photo album changed. There were no tree houses or wooden swings or new bicycles. Dad didn't even have sharp clothes. Mom's hair wasn't done. There were no more trips. Everything got a little more, what's the word for it? Oh, there you go. Poor. Well, how come the furniture went away when I came around? We had to cut back, son. The only nice thing I ever got back then was a dog. We lived on 15th and Erie, a.k.a. 15th Street and Erie Ave. It was in the heart and soul of North Philadelphia. I mean, it was a tough area where shit happened consistently. One afternoon when I was 4, I remember my dad came home with a huge Labrador. I couldn't believe it. I was so happy, man, I couldn't stop screaming. I fell in love with that dog instantly. What's this spoon? That's what my mom asked as soon as she saw it. There was a note of skepticism in her voice. You got a dog? Yeah, I bought a dog for the boys, my dad said with a forced nonchalance. Yeah, I mean, they've been talking about a dog, so I got him a dog. This dog wasn't a puppy, people. It was full grown. I mean, with a tongue as big as my arm and fur that looked like old paper that had been left in the sun too long. It was probably about 7. But it didn't matter to my brother and me. I mean, look, we've been wanting a pet for so long, we were just happy to have him. We named him Tramp, brought him into our room to play. I mean, within seconds, he was on the bed licking our faces. Then all of a sudden, the doorbell rang. I walked over to take a look. There was a man and a woman that I'd never seen before. You took our dog, they said. Yo, what? My dad asked, as if he'd never heard anything so preposterous. You took our dog, they repeated. She got loose and was running down the street, and the neighbors saw you take her and bring her here. What's going on? You know, my mom came out. She jumped in. I thought you said you bought this dog, Spoon. I did, my dad said. I could see his wheels spinning as he quickly thought of a lie. A friend of mine had it. I gave my friend money for it. The lady couldn't hear anymore. She yelled out, Coco, come here. The dog came bounding out of the room, stopped at her feet, and started nuzzling against her leg. They walked out of our house with their pet, and that was one of my first memories. Getting and losing my first dog all within 15 minutes. Now, I suppose that was also my first life lesson. Was here today, maybe gone later today. Nothing is permanent, especially my father. Not long after that, he disappeared for 4 years. Now, my dad just so happens to be here with me as I'm writing this, and he wants me to explain for the first time why he went away. So what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to slide over, and I'm going to let my dad onto the keyboard. Here are a few words from Henry Witherspoon on what he feels happened at the time. Buckle up and prepare to enter the mind that shaped and molded me. Go ahead, Dad. Chapter 3. 4 years gone. All right. Now, I guess I got to tell this story. I got to tell it for my son, Kevin, who I would do anything in the world for, just for the record, because that's my son. Okay? So I hope I made that clear. First of all, have you ever dealt with a public defender? I don't recommend it. All right? I was this motherfucker's first case. Hey, Kev, is it okay to use motherfucker in your book? Fuck it, because I said it. So, I think it's already in there, so I'm just going to go with it, all right? Here's what happened, man. Now, I come up on my bike to this house, right? And they shooting dice. So, I shot dice. I mean, I'm gambling, but I got short. I'm out of money, so I said, hey, let me go home. Let me go grab some more money. I'll be right back. When I come back, it's dark. I get up there. You know, I don't pay this place no damn mind. I'm in the game. I know where we ain't, but I ain't really paying attention to where we at. You dig what I'm saying? All I know is that the windows are boarded up. Shit, I mean, I knew people that lived in houses with windows boarded up, so that didn't mean a motherfucking thing to me. I knock on the door, ain't nobody answering. Makes sense to me. They got a game going on. So I go in. I'm like, yo, the lights is out, right? But understand this, I'm half high. Actually, fuck it, take that back. I'm whole high. Kev, what can I say to describe a level of high that puts me above where people are at when they're normally high? Because I think I was past that. I'm just going to say whole high. They get the drift. So the whole of me is high. I take a few steps, I trip over something. What the fuck? I feel around, it's a body. Now, I don't know if it's alive or dead or sleeping or high. Fuck, I'm high. This body could be high. I got every right to assume that another motherfucker could be on the same level as high as me. I pull the body to the door so I can see what the situation is, because there ain't no light in here. Suddenly a cop opened up the door. I asked the cop, I say, help me, man. Come over here and help me pull this body to the door so I can see it. Next thing I know, I'm handcuffed. Okay? That's what happened. That is the God to honest truth, Kev. And Kev, I ain't never told you that shit, so you know I ain't lying. All right? Now, I figured the cop had seen me walk into the building. I figured that. But the cop is on some shit. He gave a statement that he looked through the window and saw me having sex with this body I was dragging. Ain't that a bitch? Mind you, the body was alive. He told me it was a woman. But that ain't even possible. How you gonna see through this piece of shit boarded up window into a totally dark house? I couldn't even tell if it was a man or woman my damn self. Now, they got this girl in court 18 months later because she didn't want to come. They had me sitting in a damn detention center the whole time. And when she got there, she told him, she said, I don't know what happened. I don't even know him. Never seen him before. I don't even know how I got there. I was drinking. So there's no way that I should have went to jail. But I did. I went to jail for a rape that I didn't commit. These are straight up facts, Kev. Now, you know Nancy and her sisters wouldn't be speaking to me if that had happened. They told me that they were sitting next to these cops while they was out in the waiting room, and the cops were concocting the story that they wanted to tell. So I wound up getting about 4 to 8 years. Now, first of all, those were some bullshit charges, but ultimately, good gonna come out when it's supposed to. So they ended up letting me go home before my 4 years was up. So here I come. I'm coming home from the roughest penitentiary in Pennsylvania. And Nancy done got to a point where she expected me to be one way. But I done changed. Not the same man I used to be. You know, she hoping I'll be a perfect husband now. She's still trying to run my life and pick my friends. She want me to get a job and won't nobody hire me with that jail time. She wanting too many changes too fast. See, but what she didn't understand is that I had to be as rough as these people in jail to survive. I got harder. You understand what I'm saying? I couldn't turn that shit on and off like it was a light bulb or something. She didn't understand that. Now, what you don't know, Kev, is that one day I come in, right? I come in, I'm trying to talk to her. I'm myself right now. And I guess she had a lot of pent up anger in her. And she started hollering and cussing and getting in my face. Now, I'm macho. You know, I'm not going to let myself be spoken to that way. So I grabbed her. I told her, I said, hey, you better listen. She broke away, ran into the bedroom, reached under her side between the mattress and the springs, and pulled out a hammer of mine that I hadn't seen in a couple of weeks. I think on my feet, I looked at this and I told her, I said, now, if you raise that hammer to me, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you. I kind of toned her down with the hammer. At the same time, Kevin let me know how far we had gone and how unhappy I made this woman. Right then and there, I knew the shit was over. So I just said, to hell with this, I'm done. And I go on about my business. Chapter 4. All about my amazing shoulders. When most parents want to break bad news to their kids, they sit them down, place a hand over theirs, get real serious, have a heart-to-heart talk. My dad never did that. Instead, what my dad would do is appear out of nowhere and start laying heavy shit on me in an offhand, a matter-of-fact way. Like he was talking about what he ate for breakfast. Hey, you got a brother and sister. Also, your brother's the same age as you. Your sister's a little older. They've been around for a long time. Huh? You heard me. Go over there and say hi to your brother, and he'll say hi back. Who are you talking about? That's your brother right there around the corner. I forgot to tell you who he was, so just go over there. All right, Dad. Okay. Also, me and your mother ain't together no more. I'm leaving the house. Wait, what is going on? Look, I still want to come by from time to time. I just got to get out. Nance and I ain't seeing eye to eye.
Okay, but Dad, right now, I feel emotional, like I'm going to cry. Dad, okay, this one kind of hurts. This one kind of hurts a little bit.
You'll be all right. Don't be a bitch. Stop being a bitch. Take the goddamn information like a man and go say hi to your brother.
Okay.
I held the tears back. I wanted to show my dad that I couldn't handle this information. To be real with y'all, the shit still hurt. I mean, you know, of course it does. I'm human. But I refuse to let it hurt for too long. To this day, my brother thinks that I've got over it so quickly because I was young and he protected me. But I think that I was born with a gift. The shoulder shrug. For as long as I can remember, I've had the ability to shoulder shrug things. To just accept them. Say okay. And get on with my life. The opposite of shoulder shrugging would be to get depressed or angry and to hold on to those emotions for the rest of my life. But for whatever reason, whether it was because of my father and his matter-of-fact ways about the heavy stuff or God, you know, God putting something in me, I've been able to take in all kinds of experiences and information and process them without holding onto any negative emotion afterwards. I mean, even at a young age. It upset my brother a lot more. Kenneth is different. He still remembers my mom chasing my dad with a knife after he broke the news, as well as my dad's last words when he left. I wasted two good nuts on your ass, Nance. Those was his words. The fucked up thing is I can see the genius in that line. I think you guys get the gist of the insult. He's saying that within those two balls, he's saying that he wasted the semen that came out. So what was me and my brother, what he's saying is that I fucked it up by giving it to you. Because I could have given it to somebody else.
That's fucking pretty genius, Dad. Pretty genius.
Chapter 5. The Selfless Love of a Father. When he walked out, my dad promised that I'd still see him. I mean, for a while I did. And I remember every single time. Because the scariest and most heart-stopping things in my childhood all happened under the supervision of my father. Nearly every memory of my dad is of him exposing me to a violent or dangerous situation. He didn't do it on purpose. It was just the way he lived his life. And by being with him, I lived that life too. Memory number one. For one of our first adventures after he left, my dad picked me and my brother up from my mom's apartment. We asked him, we said, where are we going? His answer was, we're just going somewhere. Now, when you're a kid, there's a thousand questions that come up at this point. Where's somewhere? How long we gonna be there? Who else going? Or what we gonna do? But my dad never gave us opportunities for questions. See, he didn't act or think like any other person that I've ever met. So he could have been taking us anywhere. And this day, well, he had something special planned. He took us to what looked like a pond in New Jersey to rent a motorboat so we could go fishing. Now, while we were on the water, I asked if I could drive. He said, go ahead. Kev, I don't see why not. A few reasons why not might have included the fact that I was 8. I'd never been on a boat before in my life. I'd never even driven anything besides a bike. But my dad didn't live in a world of reason. See, he was a firm believer in the go-ahead school of parenting. Whatever we asked to do, he just said, go ahead. He handed me the tiller as if I'd been a boat captain my whole life and I started driving. All right, no more than a minute passed and I heard my dad saying, hey, you better slow up. You're going to hit that boat. He didn't reach out to grab the tiller from me. He just sat there. He sat there cool as can be repeating, you better slow up. Boy, you ain't slowing up. I was frozen, people. I was in a place with my hand on the throttle, and I couldn't remember which direction slowed the boat. I just guessed, and I turned the handle to my right, and I'm going to tell you something. I guessed wrong. The boat sped up. Bam! We smacked into another boat. I destroyed both boats. All my dad had to say was, damn it, boy, you done did this one bad. He didn't seem surprised. He didn't even seem pissed off. It was like he knocked over a cheap vase. Now, he told the guy that we rented the boat from, he said, look, my son done fucked up the boat, so we gonna figure it out. Now, as best as I could tell, what my dad figured out was that we was never going back there again. Memory number two. The next time I remember being with my dad, me and my brother, we were walking along the street in the neighborhood with him. Now, I'll never know where he was taking us, because out of nowhere, a group of guys just jumped him. All right? Me and my brother, we stood there. We were shocked. They just start pummeling my dad. My dad yelled out, go run home. My dad told us coolly between punches to go run home. What the fuck was that? I mean, he acted as if we were leaving him with friends. He said, go home, I'll meet you back there. Keep in mind, he's being punched and kicked in the head the whole goddamn time. Go ahead, y'all, I'll be right back. So me and my brother did what we were told. We ran home. We got home, we sat in the kitchen, we were terrified, hoping that he'd come back alive. An hour or so later, my dad strolled in the door covered in blood and casually asked, y'all all right? Y'all want something to eat? He didn't even mention the fight. It was as if nothing happened. The only other time that I seen my dad that bloody was after he got hit by that axe, which I asked him about much later, and he explained that he went to the home of someone named Mr. Jimmy. There was a man underneath the refrigerator who'd been struggling to repair for 2 hours. My dad said, move out the way, and fixed it. The next thing he knew, the other repairman chopped him in the head with an axe, presumably for taking a job away. This is how my father concluded the story. Coincidentally, a couple weeks later, that motherfucker was found dead. But I don't know nothing about it. This is how I responded. Dad, I don't want to know nothing about it either. Don't tell me shit else. Memory number 3. My mom was out, and my cousins Anthony and Daryl came over. They were in the front room with my dad, who was visiting and watching a video that my mom wouldn't allow me to see. My father was sleeping, snoring, but everyone was laughing. But it sounded like more happiness than I'd ever heard in the house, man. I peeked around the corner and I saw my cousins losing their shit. I looked to the screen and I saw a man dressed in red leather, standing alone and holding a microphone. He was just gesturing and speaking, and my cousins were all in hysterics. I didn't know before that a movie could be just one person speaking and still be so damn funny. I wanted to laugh too, but I had to stay quiet so I could watch. I remember being in school and sometimes hearing older kids reciting from that movie. That movie was Eddie Murphy Delirious. And I was feeling good about myself because I knew what they were talking about. You know, my parents, they were both big fans of stand-up comedy. My dad loved Red Fox, Robin Harris, and Richard Pryor. My mom was different. My mom would only listen to clean comedians like Sinbad, Bill Cosby. And I have vague memories of watching videos of these comics on stage telling jokes. I had no idea back then in my life would come full circle and that I would have a career doing the exact thing that brought my parents so much joy. The last memories. One afternoon, my brother and I were in the schoolyard shooting hoops. When my dad met us there, he overheard my brother talking about how good he was at basketball, so my dad decided to challenge him to a game. Thing is, my dad's not athletic in any way, shape, or form, but he's desperate and ruthless. And in the sport with no referee, that's an advantage to him. So he started playing jailhouse basketball, fouling my brother hard, elbowing him in the face. My brother, who was confused and angry that dad was being so aggressive with him, won easily anyway. After the game, my dad walked off. My dad returned 10 minutes later holding his pit bull on a chain. He looked hard at my brother and said, sick 'em facts! Then he let go of the chain. Holy shit. Now, we'd heard of pit bulls. The reason being is because they were legendary in our neighborhood. See, but my dad was different. My dad taught him to snatch pocketbooks. He'd send Fats after some women and she'd start running, then Fats would charge after her, knock her off balance, grab her purse with his fangs, and then follow my dad for a few blocks until the coast was clear. And then my dad could take the pocketbook from him and go through it. As soon as we saw that dog, my brother and I took off running. We just started climbing a nearby fence and clinging to the top while Fats was barking and snarling below. The dog was not playing any games. He was full on vicious. My dad just stood there and laughed. He ain't gonna bite you. That's my dad yelling up. Stop acting like bitches. To this day, I can't comprehend why he's sick and attack dog on his own kids just because he lost a basketball game. Only reason I can think of is that in his mind, dad never loses, so he had to win in some way. As my mom found out about these adventures, she became more and more reluctant to let my dad pick us up from school and take us pretty much anywhere. He'd beg and plead with my mom. Y'all, I'm sick of not being able to do anything for the kids. Eventually, he wore down and she let him take me to camp. Now, my mom would soon regret this decision. Instead of asking my mom for information about the camp, my dad picked me up in his car and asked, you know where we got to go to camp at? Overconfident, even back then, I said, yes, I do. All right, let's go. My dad began driving, and at every intersection, he'd ask me, which way do I turn? And I'd point very confidently, that way. Eventually, completely by chance, we came upon a school. This is it? Yep. He stopped. And before I jumped out of the car, he gave me a pep talk. Hey, man, We all got big dicks. So listen, you're going to be cool for the rest of your life. I said, what are you talking about, Dad? He said, listen to me. You see this long dick here? He gestured to the outline in the sweatpants. He never wore drawers, by the way, so he was always flowing loose. You going to grow one, too. So you never got to worry about nothing. Okay, Dad. I then jumped out the car. He didn't even wait till I got inside or saw a counselor. He just sped off. Him and his long dick just peeled off in the car. I then walked in and I was carrying a brown sack which had my lunch in it. A priest came up to me and asked, what was I there for? I was in like some kind of Catholic summer school or something. He brought me to an office and nobody there could figure out who I was. They kept checking different sheets of paper and records. Time passed. Just eat your lunch while we figure this out. That's what one of the priests told me. Eventually, he figured it out. Son, you don't go here. They asked who dropped me off, and I said it was my dad. Well, where is he? I don't know his address. What about your mom? Unfortunately for my dad, I knew her number at work. They called her, and my mom got in touch with my dad and cussed his ass out. For some reason, my dad couldn't even pick me up, so the priest walked me back to my dad's house. As soon as my dad saw us, he said, son, you told me that's where you went to camp. You gotta stop doing that, man. In his mind, he was never at fault. It was always something stupid I did. Maybe that's how I learned to have a sense of humor about myself. After all this, I could have gotten angry. I mean, what kind of dad lets an 8-year-old drive motorboat basically unsupervised? What kind of dad sicks a dog on his kids after losing a basketball? What kind of dad drops a kid outside a random church and just takes off without even checking to make sure that he's in the right place? What kind of dad makes so many enemies that people beat him in the streets when he's with his children? His craziness could have landed me in the hospital or the grave. Fuck him! And fuck anyone else who's on a power trip like that. I could have taken that road and I could have thought those things. At every moment in life, there's a fork in the path that you are on. And you can choose to go right or you can choose to go left. Every right you take leads you closer to your best possible destiny. Every left leads you further away from it. These forks are not just decisions that lead to actions, like saying yes to a job offer, but thoughts that lead to beliefs, like blaming your father for ruining your life. Your life today is the sum total of your choices. So if you're not happy with it, look back at your choices and start making different ones. Even if you are struck by lightning and injured, you made choices that led you to that spot at that particular time. And you get to choose how you feel about it afterwards. You can be angry at the bad luck that you got struck or grateful for the good luck that you survived. I made a lot of rights that led me to where I am today. And choosing to appreciate my crazy ass father was one of them. I also made a lot of lefts in the years that followed that hurt and limited me. One of my goals in life is to learn from my lefts so that I can take more rights. I never made it to camp that day with my dad. When he took me home after the whole mess, he warned me. He said, I'm about to hear your mother's mouth when I get home. So after I drop you off, understand that I don't know when the next time that I'm going to get to see you, I don't know when that's going to be, son, because your mother, she's going to be tripping. And he was right. After my mom shut the door on him that day, she didn't give him another chance to take me anywhere else. The door to childhood adventure was closed for good. But that was my right-hand path. Life lessons from mom. Hard lessons are only hard to the weak that can't survive them, and to me. Chapter 6, Thug Life. I've never done hard drugs. I've never been part of a gang. I've never smoked a cigarette. And I've only stolen one thing in my life which cost less than 50 cents. It's not because I didn't want to do these things. It's because my mother wouldn't let me. Growing up, I was terrified of my mom. She was more intimidating than any gang, so there was never a life of crime in the cards for me. Nancy Hart was 4'10" with a healthy afro and a beautiful smile. But just one look at her when that smile faded would put the fear of God into anyone, except my dad. Because even God wouldn't put fear of God into him. She had more strength in fighting her than any woman that I've ever met, with such a high level of stubbornness that you could assemble the leading experts in the world to tell her she was wrong about something, and she'd still silence them within minutes. And probably have them doing chores for her, too. After my dad left when I was 8, it was just me and her and my brother. I mean, we lived in a 3-story walk-up. My brother and I climbed those stairs so often that we had them memorized. 15 steps to the second floor and 16 from there to our floor. 31 stairs in all. Our apartment was small and cramped. The front door opened into the kitchen where my mom had laid strips of upside-down duct tape next to the sink to catch roaches. Past that, there was a bathroom and a short hallway with one door, which led to my mother's room. My brother and I slept on a bunk bed in the hallway across from her door. At the end of the corridor, there was a tiny sitting area. We couldn't afford bookshelves, so everything was displayed in boxes and crates stacked on top of each other. With Dad gone, my brother began filling in the caretaker role for me, in all the right and wrong ways. See, my mom gave him a fair amount of freedom, and he would come and go as he pleased. Just like Dad, he constantly butted heads with my mom. I mean, if he talked back, or stayed out too late, or came home fucked up in any way, my mom would grab a belt in a heartbeat, unless she was in the kitchen. Yeah, we knew not to make trouble when she was in there, because then she'd grab a pan. Or a knife. Whatever she hit you with, she'd make sure that it hurt. See, we lived in an area where anything that wasn't locked up was stolen, and anything that was locked up was stolen. You had to lock your locks up at night, people. Now, my brother soon became a part of the problem. Any mistake that you can make as a teenager, he made. I mean, he joined a gang, he robbed people, dealt drugs. I mean, on the day that he started dealing, he came home as proud as can be. His chest was puffed out, his jaw was set, and his eyes were steely. He then made a gesture I'd never seen him make before. He tilted his head upward and a little to the side until his chin was pointed directly at me, like he was a mafia boss or something. "Look," he began in a confident voice, "and I know Dad ain't around. It's just me and you and Mom. So I'm letting you know that I got us." "Huh?" He winked at me. A slow wink, too. A do-you-have-something-stuck-in-your-eye type of wink. A teenager who thinks he's grown up and has life figured out type of wink. "I got us," he continued. "So if you need anything, you come to Big Brother and I'll take care of it. You know what I'm saying?" Then he raised his right hand and summoned me with one finger. This motherfucker really thought that he was Scarface. "Come here." I walked over obediently. He pulled out a small wad of cash and peeled a $1 bill off. The wad was probably all $1 bills. My brother looked me in the eyes and said, "Go get yourself something nice. Maybe some chips or a hug." Up to that point, I had no idea what was going on, but as soon as I saw that dollar, I did not care. My brother was giving me money, and I thought that was cool. "Thanks," I responded. "I love you, man." He put on a pair of shades and left the house. The next day, my mom found his drug stash. It was hidden inside the grill at the bottom of the refrigerator. It was the worst place that he could have possibly chose to hide anything, because the kitchen was my mom's world. I mean, she knew where everything was, where everything belonged. After listening to her rage against my brother, I left the front door of the house open so I could alert him when he came home. When I heard him climbing the steps a few hours later, I looked hard at him and rolled my eyes in Mom's direction. I shook my head no, waved my hands frantically. I made an X with my arms. I eye-rolled, head shook, hand waved, and arm X all at once. I did everything I could without making a sound to set off my mom. And this fool still had no idea what I was talking about. So he walked right through that door and to his doom. As soon as she heard him, Mom marched to the door and yelled, "Oh, you selling drugs in this damn house?" She raised the pan in the air, ready to bring it down on the skull. Suddenly, and I've never seen him do this before, he dodged a blow and socked her in the ribs. Time froze. And the three of us stood frozen in silence, each with a different oh shit look on our face. The next thing I heard was my mother's voice yelling, "I'ma kill you." She grabbed not just one, but a handful of knives from the kitchen drawer. My brother wheeled around and leapt down what seemed like the entire flight of stairs. Suddenly, I heard a whoosh in the air. My mom had thrown a knife at him. Holy shit! She scrambled down the stairs after him, throwing knives until he was a speck on the horizon of the block. My brother didn't return home that night or the next day. My mom had my Uncle Albert, who was an iron worker, put bars on the windows to keep him from climbing up and sneaking in. Eventually, Kenneth called my Aunt Patsy and told her that he was staying with a friend and asked to help calm my mom down. She didn't succeed. "He can't be here," my mom raged. "If he so much as puts one foot inside this house, I'ma kill him. Time heals all wounds, people." And after a few weeks, she begrudgingly let him return. That was the end of his drug dealing phase. I was happy to have him back, and I was lucky, too, because he would soon teach me an important lesson. Chapter 7, The Legend of the Free Ball. Now, I have a reputation as a guy that you don't want on your side in the fight. Reason being is because as soon as it looks like someone's about to be hit, I run. I like keeping my teeth inside my mouth, people. At least that's my reputation. And it's pretty much my fault, because it's a part of the sense of humor that comes with being 5'4". But it's not how I live my life, thanks in large part to my brother. See, my lesson in fighting began in football practice, where a teammate kept picking on me. He called me ugly and dirty and talked shit about my mom. It was meaningless kid stuff, like he was saying my mom had an afro, which she did. But the issue was the tone in which she said it. Kids can say anything in like that mocking sing-song voice and they can make it sound uncool, you know. You got ears, man. Look at your ears. Na-na-na-na-na-na. You got ears and they on the side of your face. Look at your ears on your face. You look stupid with the stuff that God gave you that you're supposed to have. Ha! Look at you. Stupid. Stuff like that get under my skin. So I told my brother, I said, hey man, dude, I don't like what they're doing. My brother said back, he said, well, you don't let nobody pick on you. Okay? And I agreed. I agreed with my brother. But I still didn't do anything about it. I was hoping that my brother would. A few weeks later, well, my brother came to one of our games and watched the kid harassing me. He said, what'd I tell you, man? That's exactly what he said to me, in my face. Didn't I tell you don't let nobody mess with you? Go over there and stand up for yourself. When the game ended, I had no choice. I walked up to the kid, I grabbed the kid by the face mask of his helmet, then I dragged him across the field until the mask came off, at which point I began hitting him in the face. When I was done, he was crying. Coach walked over and said, hey, y'all be men and shake hands. And we shook hands, but he never talked shit again. I would have thought that a fight would escalate things, but the fact that it stopped the bullying taught me a lesson. Defend yourself at all times. Don't let nobody mess with you. I mean, if you don't stand up to them, then they'll just keep bullying you. And it will get continually worse as they push you to the edge of what they can get away with. However, if you stand up to them and they feel fear after knowing what you're capable of, they'll find someone else to belittle. Even if you lose or get beat up, at least you can go to bed at night knowing that you're not the kind of person who tolerates being pushed around. I'm grateful that my brother taught me to stick up for myself rather than him going and knocking that kid out himself. See, it empowered me. My father, on the other hand, he liked to fight my battles for me. He'd randomly appear at games drinking a 40 and then fall asleep. And if there was a call that he didn't like, he'd come roaring onto the field with the 40 in his hand, his dick swinging in the sweatpants, pressing against everyone's face as he passed the stands. And then he'd yell at the coaches and the referee, threatening to kill them all. It was a type of protection that was more embarrassing than helpful. Around school, they nicknamed my brother 40 because of it. I was always worried they nicknamed me Free Ball. You know, because my dad's dick was swinging. Remember I told y'all? His dick was loose in his pants. I was afraid of that nickname. To be honest, I gave it to myself secretly. That's a different story. We don't need to go down that route. I'm just explaining to y'all what I was afraid of. Back to what I was talking about. At school, where my brother and father weren't around to either help or hurt me, there was another bully. He was a big kid with a cast on his arm. He constantly stick his fingers in my face and knock my books onto the ground. One afternoon, I decided it was time to end this shit. Yeah, we were in the hallway, and I snuck up on him and I punched him in the face. When he tried to hit me back, I grabbed his cast, banged it against the wall as hard as I could. He started crying immediately, and I was sent to the principal's office, and I was suspended. I came home and I told my mom everything. I expected her to be furious, but to my surprise, her first response was sympathetic. You should always stand up to bullies, she said, but you need to find other ways besides fighting. I can't support violence, Kevin. Now, I still thought that I was going to get a whooping. But maybe even she saw the irony of hitting me in order to teach me not to hit other people, so she grounded me instead. Today, I've passed my brother's lessons on to my kids, and I've taught them to stick up for themselves and each other. If someone is threatening to hurt you, and they're bigger than you, then pick up something and you knock them in the head with it. Your problems will be gone. I can assure you of that. Now, that may sound like a violent message, but stopping the bully is different than being a bully. The real message is, you are somebody. You matter. And no one is allowed to take away your right to your property, your right to your safety, or your right to be yourself. Those are the things that should be defended. I've also taught my kids what I learned from my mother, that fighting is the last resort. It's always better to diffuse fights through reason and humor when possible. After those incidents, I didn't get bullied much. And when someone wanted to start a fight, I soon learned to de-escalate it just by asking, what are you doing? What are you doing? I really want to know, what are you doing? What is your plan? Because all that's going to happen, we're going to fight, and then what's going to happen? Then our day going to be messed up, and then we're going to both get punished. So why don't we just avoid that and see if we can find a better way to work this out? Occasionally, however, When I got real worked up, my logic failed me. Once, as I was wheeling my mom's clothes to the laundromat in the shopping cart, an older kid called me a pussy. True story. I know it sounds very rare because of my physique today, but I wasn't always built like this. I'm talking about when I was frail. He called me a pussy. I stopped to de-escalate. And I'm gonna tell you something, that plan didn't work. I informed him that his mother was a pussy. I ended up getting whooped by him and his friends. Now, as I laid on the ground, getting kicked, I wondered whether I really needed to stick up for myself every time. You know, when it comes down to choosing between your life and your pride, I'll keep my life every time. Soon after this, my brother followed my dad's footsteps out of the house. There are many horrible and stupid ways you can fuck up as a kid. But one of the worst is doing anything to people who can't defend themselves, like babies or senior citizens. One afternoon, my brother tried to snatch a purse from an old lady. Now, when she wouldn't let go of it, my brother then punched the woman in the stomach. Even then, the woman wouldn't let go of the purse. A few people noticed what was going on, and they started to chase my brother. My brother ran all the way home, which wasn't too smart, because the cops knew just where to find him and arrest his dumb ass. Now, this was the last straw for my mom. I mean, she refused to help him after that. The next time she spoke to him, she said she wanted to take him to the library. Instead, she took him to court, and she had him emancipated. In my brother's own hearing afterwards, the judge gave him the option of either going to juvenile detention center or enlisting in the military. So at age 17, just shy of finishing high school, my brother left for Army basic training and ultimately Schofield Barracks in Honolulu. And then there were two. Chapter 8, Mama's Boy. Some single mothers put their oldest remaining son in the role of the man of the house after the dad leaves. They'll teach him to take care of everything that their husband used to so that there's no interruption of service. Not my mom, though. No, the way she saw it, she'd been too lenient with my brother. She'd given him too much independence and let him run wild in the streets. As a parent, you can't compete with the streets. The streets will win every single time. I mean, it's all there. Women, money, drinks, drugs, and the most powerful of all, other kids who appear to have one thing your child wants more than anything. The freedom to do whatever the hell they want. So my mom figured that if she could keep me off the streets, then I wouldn't turn out like my father and my brother. She became relentless about making sure I had no free time to snatch purses, deal drugs, join gangs, or think of any independent thoughts. I was the last man standing in the house. So this wasn't just an idea or an experiment of hers. No, this became the first of her three purposes in life. The second purpose was her job in the IT department of the University of Pennsylvania, and the third was church. She'd always believed in God, but after my brother left, she became religious. Despite how hard she worked and how little she made, she began tithing to the church, ushering its services, and attending Bible study groups. You'd think that religion would make someone more gentle and compassionate, because that's the big message of the Bible. And, I mean, this may be true for some people when it comes to how they treat their friends, but it doesn't necessarily apply to how they treat their children. Because another message of the Bible is that there are serious consequences for breaking rules. My mom was tough to begin with, but now she was righteous and holy, watching, guiding, and judging my every move. All the stress and anger that she used to have about what my brother and father were doing turned into stress and anger about what I was not going to do. She set up a routine of structured, systematic, and supervised movement that she imposed on my life. If I stepped even slightly out of line, I got hit with her open hand, fist, belt, shoe, slipper, even sectioned to the plastic Hot Wheel track. Let me tell you something. She used to leave those tracks lying around the house just so they'd be convenient to punish at any infraction. I mean, I have no doubt that all this came from a place of love, but it was a love that was so controlling that I felt envious of those neglected kids at school. Her routine for me went like this. We woke up at 6 in the morning. I left to catch school bus at 7 o'clock, got to school by 8. School ended at 3. I had to go straight to an extracurricular activity like basketball. Reason why is because my mom was working. She couldn't pick me up until the evening. But my mom then decided to do some research, found out that the Philadelphia Department of Recreation had a swim team that practiced most weekdays until 8:30. So what did she do? Well, she signed me up to swim after basketball. The timing was so tight that if I didn't catch the bus and the train and make it to swim practice on time, she'd know that I was doing something I wasn't supposed to do. The schedule she designed didn't leave any room for anything but hustle. That's where it all began. My mom was particularly proud of having found a swim team because she couldn't think of a single swimmer who had ever been a criminal, which made it that much better in her eyes.
I swam and I swam and I swam until I was over it. And I still had to keep swimming until I graduated high school. After practice every day, my mom picked me up, brought me home, sat me down to do homework. When I finished, she fed me, checked my work, made me redo parts that weren't good enough for her. Then she drew me a bath, put me to bed, too exhausted to do anything but sleep. On weekends, my mom wouldn't let me out of her sight. Either I went to swim meets or I had to tag along with her to work, church, shopping, friends' homes, and Bible study groups. Whatever the events and obligations in her life happened to be, I was the guy who had to do them with her. There was no escape, no movies, no hanging out with friends, no room for any error, nothing on my own. When a friend wanted to go to a movie, or a classmate invited me to his birthday party, or I wanted to watch an afternoon television show, if it didn't fit into my mom's plans, it was not happening. What made this schedule even tougher was that my mom didn't believe in driving. She was a firm advocate of public transportation. It's there for a reason, that's what she'd always say. Wherever it is that you want to be, we can get there. This woman could have been a mathematician. She had every weekend planned out according to the bus schedule. All right, well, we're going to take SEP there this time. Then we would walk 12 minutes so we can catch the 15, which would come exactly 5 minutes. Then the 15 is going to take us to the L. The L would take us to the subway, and then we'll be back home by 9 o'clock tonight. On Saturdays, when my mom would want to go shopping, we would have to get up at 7 in the morning. Reason being, so we could get to the mall with the cheapest discounts by the afternoon. Let me tell you something. I hated this most of all in the winter, because we had to march around the city and wait at those poorly sheltered bus stops in the freezing cold. Once we got to the mall, my mom had a whole new schedule and set of rules. "Don't ask me for nothing." That's what she would say. That was her favorite line. "Not a damn thing. You know what we're here for. And we're going to get what we got to get, and then we're going to go. Do you understand?" Now, if I was good and I didn't ask for anything, sometimes she'd get me a slushie or like a slice of pizza to get me hype about carrying her shopping bags home. It was all a mental manipulation trick that women do. I now know this because I'm married. The transportation jigsaw puzzle on the way home was even worse, because I had to do it loaded down with bags. These days sometimes took up to 6 hours of preparation and transportation just to spend an hour at the mall. Back then, all this drove me mad with frustration. But as I write about it today, I'm not complaining. I actually appreciate it. See, unbeknownst to her, Mom was preparing me for the grind ahead. As I was working on this book, for example, I'm in my trailer on the set of a movie. This is what my day was like yesterday. When I woke up, I ran for 90 minutes. I lifted weights for another hour. Then I had to pack my stuff to switch hotel rooms. After that, I had lunch, followed by 3 back-to-back meetings that lasted another hour and a half. From there, I went straight to the lobby to take a van to the movie set. I got there at 4 in the afternoon. Didn't start shooting my scene until midnight. That scene only took 15 minutes. And then I waited another 2 hours to shoot for 20 minutes. I waited another hour and a half until production assistant told me they didn't need me anymore, at which point I caught a van back to the hotel and went to bed just after 4 in the morning. In other words, I'm pretty much doing the same thing I did as a kid. I'm living a tightly organized and structured routine, except instead of a mall, I'm spending 12 hours on set just to shoot for 30 minutes. If I complained about this or I threw a tantrum, I probably wouldn't be working today. Instead, this schedule is something that I easily accept, because it's always been a part of my life, and it turns out that the things that I hated most as a child are the same things that serve me the most as an adult. Chapter 9. Snapping Fucking Peas. "Hey, Max," one of my aunts was telling my mother on the phone, "you know Cheryl's having everyone over for dinner tomorrow. You want us to swing by and pick you and Kevin up on the way?" I stood next to the phone, and I'm thinking to myself, please, oh my God, please, please, Mom, just say yes, please. The reason why is because it would save hours of time and aggravation if my aunt just gave us a ride. But I couldn't say this out loud, because if I uttered even a word, even one word, as soon as my mom got off that phone, she'd pop me in the mouth. See, one thing my mom hated was when it looked to others like her household was out of control. Now, I tried begging her to accept the ride once before, and her response was to pause, smack me around, and snap. "Don't you embarrass me, and you shut your mouth when I'm talking." Hoping for the impossible, I dropped down next to her and waited, only to hear her tell my aunt, "No, we're okay. We don't need y'all to pick us up. We're going to go ahead and take the bus." The goddamn bus. Let me tell you something about that bus. I could recite every advertisement on that fucking bus by heart. I walked to my bed using every ounce of willpower I had to keep myself from kicking something. "How the hell did you get so stupid?" That's what I was yelling into my pillow,
so it sounded like this.
You're so stupid. Why don't you want to take a ride nowhere?
Little stupid, stubborn ass. You know, you get real good at cussing when you sneak to do it. I had a run on S's that was to die for. You sneaky, stupid, stubborn ass. You can't tell me that's not genius as a kid. It was genius. It was brilliant. I could never let anybody hear it. I had to keep it to myself. Now, the family dinner began at 6 in the evening, so we had to leave the house at 10 in the morning. We started then not because the commute to the middle of nowhere in West Oak Lane was so long, but because I don't fucking know why, okay? When we arrived, the only person at the house was my cousin Cheryl, who was 20 years older than me, by the way. Her husband, Preston, he was getting out groceries, and the kids, they were in the street playing. Eventually, my aunts Hattie, Patsy, and May arrived, which meant I was now sitting around with five old ladies bored out my skull, hoping that they'd let me go outside and play. But instead of doing that, which would be the right thing to do, they decided to put me to work in the kitchen. Some people cook with love. I prepared the food with hate, muttering angrily under my breath the whole time. Got me in here snapping some fucking peas. Anybody else in here? I'm hanging out like an idiot 4 hours before dinner. This is bullshit. Kevin, hey, Kevin, you go wash that pot out for your aunt. Yeah, Mom. I'm on it. I go wash the pots. Wash these pots with my piss. See how you like those snap peas with a little piss in them. Be some soggy ass snap peas. Give you some pissy peas. You want some fucking pissy peas in your pot? That's what I put in here. Since I can't play, I'm gonna give you a pot of pissy peas. That's what you gonna get. And of course, I couldn't actually work up the nerve to sabotage the food or even rebel in any way. I washed the pots, I cleaned the greens, and I cooked while my mom talked and laughed with her sisters in the living room. Eventually, other relatives arrived, and my cousin Preston came home, and he went straight upstairs to watch Die Hard. Hey, your aunt said to take that vinegar upstairs and give it to your cousin. That's what my mom yelled out soon after. Well, I don't understand why she just don't take it to Preston her own goddamn self. That's what I muttered under my breath. And I realized that if I took the vinegar upstairs, I could watch some of the movie with him. I climbed the stairs. But that moment that I crossed the threshold of his room, Preston yelled, hey, what are you doing, boy? Get out of here. I said, I got your vinegar. He said, so the hell what? Oh, okay, I know what's going on here. They got you down there in that kitchen doing a bunch of shit. He just started laughing at me. Innocently. This came from the most innocent place in my body. I asked him, I said, hey, you know, can I stay up here with you? He said, hell no. No, man, just put the vinegar on the table and get the hell out. I did exactly as he asked. And I just sat at the top of the stairs so I could at least listen to the movie. Boy, what are you doing? That's when he barked after a couple minutes when he caught me on the top of the step. Get your ass back down there with them women. I did exactly as I was told. I went back down there with the women. You know, sometimes you don't realize how pathetic your own life is until you see it staring back at you on the page of your book. As I set the table just before dinner, fed up from the work, I thought about the long bus trip we'd have to take home in the cold that night. That's when I decided to make my move. I pulled my Aunt Patsy aside and whispered, don't tell my mom that I'm asking you this. Because if she find out, she's going to get mad at me, Aunt Patsy. So I'm asking you to please not say nothing. But can you... just don't let her catch the bus tonight when we leave, because it's going to be late. We'll be out there so long in that cold. Then I pulled my cousins aside and I pleaded with them as well, working all angles. I was talking to everybody. When they told me that they got me, I breathed a sigh of relief. During the meal, once everybody started drinking, one of my older cousins said, hey, Nance, that boy don't want to be on that bus tonight. Why don't you go ahead and let us take you home? My mom instantly looked at me. We locked eyes for 1 second. Without knowing what else to do, I just put my head down and start eating them nasty-ass peas that I snapped. My mom said, no, he's fine. Kevin, ain't you fine? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. No, I'm fine. Whatever, Mom. You know it don't matter to me. She said, you know what? We should get out of here now anyway so we can get home at a reasonable hour. Understand that the dinner wasn't even over, people. My mom made us get up and leave. It made no sense to me. Boy, I was so damn mad. But I couldn't show it because I didn't want to get smacked all the way home. The night bus schedule was so sparse, man. I mean, we didn't end up getting home until midnight of the damn night. Today, I understand why she wouldn't accept the ride. See, she didn't want to be a burden to anyone. Her heart was so big that she'd rather be out in the cold at night for 4 hours than inconvenience someone for a half an hour. It was always just us. 100% fucking us. And there was no hope for me to experience anything different because her convictions and her patterns were set in stone. Back then, I saw her as the worst, meanest person ever. I was irritated that she'd been much more lenient with my older brother. I mean, anything he wanted to do, she'd say, all right. Anything I wanted to do, she'd say, no. When I